Okay, this is March 18th, and the topic this month is thoughts.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Such is the nature of life, that all it asks and all at once is an opportunity to appear. You are that opportunity, and so am I. It is the purpose of this teaching to make us aware of this essential truth of our being. With that said, we're going to talk tonight about thoughts, but before we do that, I found this on Sunday, and I thought this is very good, the little thing from Unity, and it is, God is my prosperity. Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore said, God is your prosperity. He advised, stamp this thought daily on your mind, and you will reap financial success. See that word, stamp it on your mind and your daily thought. The inexhaustible substance of God is our source of abundant supply. While social status and physical possessions come and go, God is unchanging. Material belongings, while enjoyable, are not the true measure of prosperity. Knowing God as infinite source is the key to abundant consciousness. I strengthen my awareness of God as a source by giving thanks for all I have, all I receive, and all I give. Rather than affirming lack, I bless all I have and use it wisely in the flow of infinite abundance. I give with joy and receive with gratitude. You see, we never want to affirm lack and limitation in our life. We always want to see prosperity and abundance. And that's the idea of what we're talking about tonight, about thoughts. You must have thoughts in your mind that heal you, bless you, and prosper you. You must be thinking prosperous thoughts all the time. When you do that, you're going to draw prosperity into your life. But since we live in a world of lack and limitation, and since most people are always telling you what they don't have, instead of what they do have, you see. So if you tell people what you don't have, you get more of it. If you tell people what you have, you get more of it. It's the old thing in the Bible. It says, to he who has more will be given. To he who has a prosperity consciousness, more will be given to him. And I find that all the time, and I use that in my life, and I'll give you an example of that recently. I have a friend, and when she buys theater tickets all over town, and when she doesn't use them, she always gives them to me. And when I can't use them, and they're $80 tickets, and she always gives me two. That's $160 right there, says here. And when I can't use them, I give them to Andy. I just pass that on. But that's prosperity and abundance, see? And I'm very thankful for my friend Marilyn. I'm very thankful that I get the tickets. I'm very grateful that I then can give that prosperity to somebody else and keep it all moving, just keep the whole thing moving. So I don't think of lack and limitation. I don't say, oh, I can't afford to go to that theater. Do you hear many people? I have so many friends who say, oh, tickets are too expensive. I can't afford to buy the tickets. See, I never say I can't afford to buy anything. And I always leave it open to receive. So I receive free tickets. You see, you don't have to pay for everything with money to have prosperity and abundance. It comes to you when you have a consciousness, when you're thinking thoughts of abundance, when you're thinking thoughts of prosperity. And not listening to the world who teaches lack and limitation. And I told you, I have a friend. I can't be around her because all she wants to tell me is what she doesn't have. I don't want to know what she doesn't have. I don't even care what she does have, but I certainly don't want her to be going on about how poor she is, which I know cannot be true. But she thinks she's poor, and she will be poor, you see. If you think you're poor, you're going to be poor. When she could have $1 million come to her, she wouldn't know what to do with it. She wouldn't know what to do with it because she has a consciousness of lack and limitation. All right. With that said, here's something that I thought was wonderful, and we'll go through it quickly, because over the years I've said many of these things, so this is all put together here. The God particle is now confirmed. The past 2 days have been an exciting announcement from the world of science. The existence of the God particle has been confirmed by the CERN Particle Physics Laboratory in Switzerland. The God particle, known in scientific circles as the Higgs boson, depends upon the existence of the Higgs field. The Higgs field permeates all of space and gives particles their property of mass. This resurrects the idea of ether as a universal field. Do you remember me using the word ether? It's in the ethers. Well, they took that away. You know, metaphysicians used to talk about ethers, but they could never prove ether. Now they're proving ether, so it's back in again. The ether concept, went out of fashion a century ago and sent physicians into a cul-de-sac from which it can now escape. The recognition of the most fundamental field in the universe reopens the doorway to the much coveted idea of a unified field theory that will explain all fundamental forces. And if you remember, the unified field was what Einstein was after. He did not obtain it in his lifetime. But he said there will be a unified field and an equation that will explain that, and it will be very simple. So now that's back. And the reason why this is so important is because Ernest Holmes said that one day science and religion will walk hand in hand with each other. Science and religion will walk hand in hand. But religion has always poo-pooed science. It's just lately, you know. And the biggest culprit of defying science was the Catholic Church. Remember? They killed you. Remember, they wanted to kill Galileo, but he recanted and said, okay, have it your way. It's good, you know. Yeah, whatever you say, I'm going to save my life so I can continue. The popular science press reports the discovery of the Higgs particle as one of the most important scientific advances of the past 100 years, proving that there is an invisible energy field that pervades the vacuum of the known universe and gives mass to the smallest building blocks of matter. Without this field, they deduce, there would be no planets, stars, or life as we know it. So we're talking about the God particle, and what do we say there? God is everywhere present, or the God particle is everywhere present in the whole universe, you see. And that's where everything comes from. Things that are seen come from things that are not seen. And when we're talking about thoughts and all, we talk a lot about thoughts, and they're very, very important. But we must also remember that it's always the gap between thoughts where things happen. It's the gap between your thought. And we're learning that the space around anything is more important than the thing itself. The space around something is more important than the thing itself, because it's the space or the God particle that is making that particle. It's making that mass. So it's the things that you don't see that are important, not the things that you see. In a previous article, I proposed that all persuasive ether or Higgs field be called the God field. Let's face it, if a Nobel Prize in physics recipient can call the Higgs boson the God particle, then why can't we call the Higgs field the God field? The important thing is that the ether, the fabric of space, is once again being recognized, and this recognition will remove the blockage that was holding back our understanding of the laws of the universe. For example, one of the limitations we still face is that the cause of Maius is a great unknown to the science of physics. To rephrase that, why does a body made of energetic particles have weight? What causes weight or mass? Now science will be able to move towards showing that the effect that produces mass is particles' energetic interaction with the subtle magnetic energy of the fabric of space. You can read this at home and let it absorb in. Another great mystery in physics is the nature of gravity. If the fabric of space becomes understood as a subtle magnetic energy which only responds when acted upon by electric particles, then it can be seen that any body of matter will contain an intensification of that substance, magnetic energy. This creates an attractive field. Well, here again, we know that thoughts go someplace and do something, that thoughts attract. So what you think about, you bring about. So your thoughts have a magnetic quality to them. When you think of magnetism as a fundamental energy, try to avoid thinking of bar magnets and their closed-loop fields. Instead, think of the more subtle vision of magnetism as a magnetic fluid which fills all space and is passive until acted upon. Because magnetic energy is creative when activated, solid objects will have an inherent attractiveness to other solid objects, and big objects like the Earth will have enough of that inherent attraction to hold little objects like you and me safely on the ground instead of floating away into outer space. We live in times when science, even though focused towards a more material view than metaphysics, is nevertheless producing revelations which will eventually cross the barrier between the material and the immaterial. We live in fascinating times. And that's what you have to realize. We're living in fascinating times. We are starting to prove all of this. All this mumbo-jumbo, if you want to call it, that we're talking about. You can take it on faith. You could also now start to prove it scientifically. And that's what this teaching is about. That is why it's called science of the mind. It has that word science. And science means that if I can do something, you can do it. It has to be able to be repeated. That's what makes something scientific. If I can do it, and you can do it too, and it's repeated, then it becomes scientific. So we want to learn all those things. So, daily, we are learning new and bigger things about ourselves and about the universe. Things that we may have thought of and couldn't prove. See? So you can take all this on faith, but you don't have to. You do not have to take it on faith. It can now be proven. Can we prove that there is such a thing as God? Well, we know perfectly well that there's a force out there. We know that. And if you want to call it God, call it God. You can call it Harry, Henry, or whatever you want to call it. God does not care what it's called. We are the ones who think God cares. It's not true. Gravity is part of God, because all there is God. Gravity works the same for me and the same for you. It doesn't work differently for me than it does for you. It was Albert Einstein, in his theory of relativity, was the one who discovered that the fabric of space changes, or that gravity bends. You see, if you put a field out here, we'll use this paper. This is gravity. Now the Earth, when it hits this, pushes down. it bends gravity. Mass and weight bend gravity. Something that they didn't know before. And that's the whole theory behind relativity. So, this month we were talking about our thoughts. And what to do about our thoughts. And realize that we can change our thoughts. The only thing that you can ever change is your thought. You cannot change somebody else, you cannot change a situation, but you can change your thoughts about the situation and change your thoughts about the person. When you do that, the situation changes and so does the person. Because we do not see with our eyes, we see with our mind. And when we are able to change our mind about something, the thing that we are thinking about changes. If we constantly hold a concept in our mind about something, it will not change. The only way you can change it is to change your concept about it. So, learn to think the thought that you want to think. That is what it's all about. And we'll go back a moment to prosperity and abundance. See prosperity and abundance everywhere. And you will start to have prosperity and abundance. Charles Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, was very good. Remember, Ron, I told you that words structure thought, and thought structures reality. He uses words. He's very good with words, like the word stamp this in your mind. Stamp this on your consciousness. Make a mark in there, you know, so that it's there. Brand it into your consciousness. So we have to learn to use words. The most wonderful thing that Charles Fillmore ever said was, I sizzle with life. I sizzle with life. And that's what you want to do. You want to learn to sizzle with life. And you do that by changing your mind. By changing your mind about yourself. By changing your mind about the world that we live in. That it is a wonderful place to be. And when we get that through our consciousness, here again, your whole life changes. Many people think it's a dog-eat-dog world. Many people think that they struggle, and they have to struggle all the time. To get where they are, to get anything in life, they have to claw for it. They have to struggle for it. That is not what we are here for. We are not here to struggle. We are here to accept ourselves as the wonderful, creative beings that we are. And learn to use this creativity to bring into our lives what we want instead of what we don't want. I was talking to a friend this morning and I said, I do not want to go through all that, which I call the nits and fleas of life. We do not have to have the nits and fleas of life. Many people think, oh, that's the way life is. We have to put up with all this. No, you don't have to put up with that. Why do you want to put up with that stuff? See? Don't put up with anything that you don't want to put up with. Get rid of it. Get it out of your life. You only have this one life on this plane of action. So why not have a wonderful life while you're here? Why not do that? So what are the concepts that we want to keep in mind about ourselves? We are worthy. We are deserving. We are totally lovable. And we matter. With that, let's do the matter dance. I matter, I matter, I really, really matter. I matter, I matter, I really, really matter. Yes. I don't know if anyone watched 2020 or 60 minutes. It was 60 minutes, I think, that had the young man who invented Twitter. He also invented the Square. I can't remember his name for some reason. He they ask him, with all this stuff coming out, like the Square, which is using your credit card just on the cell phone, you can, anyone can become a user. There are competitors out there. And they said, what are you going to do about the competitors? You have to stay ahead of them. You have to do this and that and the other. He said, I don't worry about that. I don't worry about competition. See, in this teaching, we never worry about competition. We only worry about creativity. What his main thing that he said was, the man said, well, how are you going to stay ahead of all these other people? He said, I'm going to focus. I'm going to focus. In the Bible, that is called having a single eye. You must have a single eye. Very difficult for most of us to do. It comes from focusing. You must focus on what you want. Do you remember our friend, Emmett Fox, in the Mental Equivalent, said, think of your mind and the focusing as a camera. And the iris of the camera opens up and is going to take the picture. But if you keep putting something else in front of it, and putting something else in front of it, and putting something else in front of it, when you develop it, what are you going to have? A big blur. You must hold an image and focus on an image long enough for it to come into your life. Long enough for it to come into your life. We become impatient and we allow what we are focusing on to move out of the way and we start to think about something else. You must keep your mind focused on what you want. Where thought goes, energy flows. So keep your thoughts focused on what you want, like prosperity and abundance. We think, oh, prosperity, abundance, prosperity, abundance, prosperity, abundance. Then we turn on the television and then that tells us that the economy is at the worst it's ever been. The unemployment's this is going on, that's going on. People need more money and yeah. Now you focus on that instead of focusing on the prosperity and abundance. I never believe anything that's on the television. I believe very little that's in the newspapers or any of that. I make my observations for myself. When I run around this city, what do I see? I see people eating out. I see the restaurants full. I see construction all over town. Every time I turn the corner, there's a new building going up. Condos, new shops coming in. Across from the Pantages Theater, that was a vacant lot. It's now going to be a high rise with living spaces and shops underneath and all. So everywhere you look, so you have to say, oh, isn't that wonderful? There's prosperity and abundance. Let's keep our thinking on that. Let's see those things, you see. So I see those things. Yes, I see the homeless people, but I do not dwell on them. I see the homeless people. My heart goes out to them. My compassion goes out to them. But I don't join them. I join the people that are building. You see. If you start to do that and see all that and get yourself involved in that. We had a woman here, remember? When it was always helping the poor. She became poor. You can't do it. The man Jesus said, the poor will always be among us. And what he meant by that, poor in consciousness. Poor in consciousness. We'll go back a moment to Charles Fillmore. Charles Fillmore stood up years ago and said, it is a sin to be poor. It is a sin to be poor. Why is it a sin to be poor? Because you have a mind. You're connected to this thing in the universe that we call God. There is no reason for anyone to be poor. No reason for anyone to be poor. Yet we have poor people among us. Why? Because they're not thinking correctly. They're not thinking correctly. They're certainly not holding themselves in the highest of esteem. I'm sure they don't get up in the morning and say, I'm worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and I matter. They say, oh my goodness, look, I'm awful, and this is going on, and that's going on, and they're begging for money. You see? You cannot do that. I do not also want to tell you not to give to them. If you want to give to them, give to them. But don't become them. You see? Charity begins at home. Charity begins at home. You cannot build anybody up and you cannot prove anything unless you are the example for it. You must become the example. And if you start to make money and you have the job and you have living your life decently, people see that. And then they want to do that also. But if you do the other thing and get involved with all that poor stuff that's going on out there, it's not helping those people. I've said this before and I'll say it one more time. It's all done with your thinking. It's all done with consciousness. And when you give somebody something that they have cannot handle, they do not have a consciousness to hold it, they will not hold it. And that's proven all the time. Because in this country, we have what's called the welfare system. Those people never get out of the welfare system. Very rarely does anyone get out once they get in. You see? Because they don't have a consciousness. They don't have a consciousness to get out of it. They're used to somebody else doing everything for them. We build beautiful housing projects and we put poor people in. And those, in no time flat, those places look exactly like the dumps that we moved them out of because they're used to it. It's very difficult for somebody in Watts to get a prosperity consciousness. Because they look around and there's no beauty, there's no life, there's nothing going on there for them to see. We try to bring the arts into those things. We try to help them and show them that there's a different way. That there's a different way. That's all we can do. But we can't keep giving and giving and giving without first saying to somebody, do you know that you are worthy? Do you know that you're deserving? People in those situations talk very poorly about themselves and very poorly about everybody else. You see? And you can't do it. It just drags you down. So that's a thought atmosphere that's going on there. Remember I talk about thought atmospheres? You must stay in a thought atmosphere that's beneficial for you, not one that is not beneficial for you. Do you remember Maya Angelou? If somebody is doing something in her house or saying something negative in her house, she asks them to leave because she does not want it in the walls. She does not want it in her house. She does not want it in the atmosphere. And I think that's a wonderful thing to say to people. We don't do that here. If you want to do that, go outside. But don't bring that into my home. Thoughts go someplace and they do something. Thoughts affect us. They affect us all the time. And it's our thoughts that are doing the affecting. Many people are waiting, sitting around, waiting to be happy. Like happiness is going to drop out of the air. If you want to be happy, you must start to think happy. You must start to think happy thoughts. You see, I see all these things for depression on television. I think it's very funny that anyone would take any of that stuff after you hear all the side effects that they have, you know. But depression can be cured if you sit down with a person and explain to them what a wonderful human being they are. So it doesn't matter what the situation is. What matters is what you are thinking about yourself. What are you thinking about yourself? Always keep your thoughts centered, focused on what you want. And learn to think God thoughts after it. What would God do in a situation like this? How would God think in a situation like this? And then start to think in that manner. Start to think in that manner. Do you think if we have this thing called God, that God could ever be defeated? No, God cannot be defeated, but we can be defeated. And how are we defeated? Because we start to believe in our own small mind, and we start to believe in what other people are talking about. Instead of saying, that has nothing to do with me whatsoever. I'm going to keep myself right here. I'm going to center myself, and I'm going to know that I'm a magnificent human being. Those are the thoughts you want to think about yourself. And let everybody else do whatever they want. Think for your own self. Learn to think better thoughts about yourself. We can grow bigger and bigger all the time. You know, we have never reached the apex of anything. We will never do that because we are not infinite. We are finite. We are connected to the infinite, but we are finite. So we cannot think. It's very hard when we say infinite. No one knows exactly what that means. Oh, that's infinite. My infinite, oh, goes on forever. Where does yours go? Maybe it hits the wall. Infinite is a word very hard to understand. We must try, though, to become infinite. We must try to become infinite. And the problem with trying to become infinite is we try to bring the finite, this thing called God, down to the finite. And we have to take the finite up to the infinite. You see? The finite can be contained in the infinite. The infinite cannot be contained in the finite. So we have to expand our thinking. We have to expand our minds so that we see things differently. Or, as Ernest Holmes would say, see things rightly. You see, we don't see things rightly the way we are supposed to. Which brings us back to that man, Jesus, again, who said, do not judge by appearances. We constantly are judging by appearances, and we make big conclusions when we see something. And you must never reach a conclusion. When you reach a conclusion, your mind stops thinking. You think you have figured it out, so you stop. So, our little mind loves to come to conclusions because it has to know the answer. And it'll come up with any answer so that you reach that conclusion. Whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, it will come up with it. Don't allow your mind to do that. The young man here is new, so I'll go through the idea once again. And I have to do this to myself. Every day I think I do it. I have to sit down always and remind myself that I am not my mind. My mind is mine to use. And the mind just keeps going and going and going. My mind can come up with the most ridiculous things. And it can certainly beat me up. Now I'm learning not to allow that to happen. I am the boss here, not my mind. I don't want to think that thought, thank you. Give me another thought. Give me a better thought. Give me a bigger thought. But many people, when they have a thought, they think, oh, that belongs to me. It doesn't belong to you. It's just a thought. It's just a thought. And if it's not the right thought, it's not going to get you to where you're focused on, you have to get rid of it. You have to get rid of that thought. And you have to start thinking better thoughts about yourself. This teaching, I always say, is very simple, and it is very simple. It's done by you, and only you can do it. Because I cannot think for you, I cannot breathe for you, and I cannot eat for you. Only you can do that. So you take the things that I say, and you can make them anything that you want. You can change them. The whole idea in life, as I see it, here I am teaching somebody. I want you to be able to go out and teach. Teach in your own way. Expand it. Do something with it, you see. Because students can't remain students all their life. You have to change. You have to become a teacher. You have to start teaching other people this. And not be afraid to do that. Not be afraid to step up and say, oh, I don't think that. That's not the way to think about something. So, science is proving this teaching all the time. All the time. Go home, absorb this, what this man was saying here. Figure that one out. And also remember the idea of quantum physics. We didn't have quantum physics before. You know, we lived in a Newtonian world. And we still live in a Newtonian world, by the way. And most of the things that Isaac came up with work. But there are more to it than he ever knew. More to it than he ever knew. When the apple hit him on the head and he said, oh, here's gravity. He had no idea that the mass of a planet can warp the fabric of gravity. Can warp the fabric of gravity. Gravity you must think of as a cloth, a bed sheet perhaps. Now, if you have a bed sheet and it's very taut, you put a bowling ball on it. Does not the bowling ball roll to the center and does it not the cloth come down? That's what gravity is. That's a gravitational field. That's what our whole universe is based on. It bends. It does things. Newton did not know that. Newton came up with wonderful things, but now we must move past that. So we're stuck in this world at the present moment, still relying on Newtonian physics. But now we have quantum physics. We have quantum physics now. And we'll have another type of physics, you see. They'll discover more and more and more and more. What are we discovering? When I was a child and so forth, learning, especially in science and so forth, was always to find the biggest thing. The biggest thing. Now we realize we're always looking for the smallest thing. You see, quantum physics is the idea of the smallest little thing going on. And in those small little things, things change very rapidly and very quickly. They don't in the Newtonian physics. But both of those physics work together, by the way. We'll never throw one away. But they have to work together. They have to work together. So what I'm trying to say here is we have to think differently now. And we have to move into a completely different way of thinking. And that young man who invented Twitter and also wants to become the mayor of New York, which I think would be wonderful, he looks at patterns. He looks at systems. And he's able to reduce them to something that's very simple. He used the example of the Golden Gate Bridge. And he said, we look at the Golden Gate Bridge, we don't see all the traffic and all the stuff, the utility that goes on with it. We look at it and see how beautiful it is. And when you look at the Golden Gate Bridge, it's absolutely beautiful. And it's a very simple structure. It's a very simple structure. Two posts and a thing. But it's beautiful. And he says, that's what we want to make technology. It has to be beautiful. And it will be beautiful. And it's done with that type of thinking. It's done with a different type of thinking. So with your own life, to bring it home again to you, it is your thinking. What you are thinking about, you are going to bring about. What you are thinking about yourself, you are going to become. Henry David Thoreau said, what a man thinks about all day long, he becomes. What a man thinks about all day long, he becomes. So what are you thinking about yourself? What do you want to become in life? Change your thinking. And you will change your life. And I know that because I changed my thinking. 35, maybe 40 years ago, my thinking was absolutely stinking. It was horrible. I hated myself. I hated life. I hated this whole thing. I couldn't figure a damn thing out. I thought nothing makes sense whatsoever. People are ugly. They are nasty. There's this going on. There's that going on. But when I got into this teaching, I started to change my mind. And now I see things differently. And I am delighted that I have done that. And I'm delighted that I found this teaching. If I wouldn't have found this teaching, I would no longer be on this planet. 40 years ago, I was smoking 4 packs of cigarettes a day and drinking a half a gallon, one of those big things, of bourbon a day. I would not be alive today. It's this teaching. And it came to me as a realization, a wonderful, we could call it an aha moment if you want. But I am here to tell you that this teaching absolutely works. And it will bring to you what you want if you keep applying it. Ernest Holmes said this is not a get-rich scheme. But you can get rich using it. You can get rich using it. And you get rich using it by realizing that we do not live in a world of lack and limitation. We live in a world of prosperity and abundance. And that we can be anything that we want to be. And being able to do that, we give up the past. Do not think about the past. Think about the present. And think about what you're going to do. And with that, we stop blaming the world, other people, our parents, our school, whatever we were blaming things on. You cannot do that. You must take full responsibility for yourself and full responsibility with your thinking. What are you thinking about? You must learn to discipline your mind. You must learn to become a witness to your own thinking. My Aunt Catherine, who lived to be 95 years old, knew this, how to do this. She did not know this teaching, except through me, when I would introduce her to things. But she was always in the greatest spirit. She lived by herself. She was able to do all the stuff. She didn't rely on anybody to do anything. She did it herself. I said to her, how do you always keep in such good humor? How do you always seem to be pleasant? She said to me, well, Dallas, I control my thinking. I control my thinking. And that is what this teaching is about. Controlling your thinking. Realizing that thoughts go someplace and do something. And that you are responsible for those thoughts. You are responsible for the thinking. And if your mind is thinking for you, you are lost. You must take a hold of that mind and say, from here on in, I am the master. And you must listen to what I am telling you. You must listen to what I am telling you. Your mind will kick and scream and have a tantrum like a small child at first. But it will tame itself down, and it will learn that you are the master. You must become the master of your own thinking. You must become a master of your own life. And you do that with your thoughts. You do that with your thoughts. So, learn to think good thoughts about yourself. No one else says something kind to you all day long. Say something kind to yourself. If you're waiting around for somebody to tell you how wonderful you are and how marvelous you are, it may never happen. So why don't you tell yourself, I'm a marvelous individual. I'm a marvelous individual. See? It's such a burden to wait to give that to somebody else to do. I'm waiting for them to tell me something. Who wants to give them that burden? You take that burden and do it for yourself. You don't need. It's nice, but you do not need that. What you need is to be able to say, I love myself just the way I am. And each and every day I'm learning to love myself more and more and more. Each and every day, I'm accepting myself. I'm appreciating myself. I see how wonderful my mind works. And it will start doing that for you. It will start doing that for you. So hold yourself in the highest of esteem. Learn to think the thought that you want to think. And it's wonderful, and so are you, and so am I, and there ends the lesson. Thank you.